"Keep your eyes closed until you're quite sure you can take it," he called. "The view is overwhelming. If anyone finds that it's too much, keep on climbing without looking back. Remember, you'll soon be at zero gravity, so you can't possibly fall." It was hardly necessary to point out such an elementary fact to trained spacemen, but Norton had to remind himself of it every few seconds. The thought of zero gravity was a kind of talisman, protecting him from harm. Whatever his eyes told him, Rama could not drag him down to destruction on the plain 8 kilometers below. It became an urgent matter of pride and self-esteem that he should open his eyes once more and look at the world around him. But first he had to get his body under control. He let go of the ladder with both hands and hooked his left arm under a rung. Clenching and unclenching his fists, he waited until the muscle cramps had faded away. Then, when he felt quite comfortable, he opened his eyes and slowly turned to face Rama. His first impression was one of blueness. The glare that filled the sky could not have been mistaken for sunlight. It might have been that of an electric arc. "So, Rama's sun," Norton told himself, "must be hotter than ours. That should interest the astronomers." And now he understood the purpose of those mysterious trenches, the Strait Valley and its 5 companions. They were nothing less than gigantic strip lights. Rama had 6 linear suns, symmetrically ranged around its interior. From each, a broad fan of light was aimed across the central axis to shine upon the far side of the world. Norton wondered if they could be switched alternately to produce a cycle of light and darkness, or whether this was a planet of perpetual day. Too much staring at those blinding bars of light had made his eyes hurt again. He was not sorry to have a good excuse to close them for a while. It was not until then, when he had almost recovered from this initial visual shock, that he was able to devote himself to a much more serious problem. Who, or what, had switched on the lights of Rama? This world was sterile by the most sensitive test that man could apply to it, but now something was happening that could not be explained by the action of natural forces. There might not be life here, but there could be consciousness, awareness. Robots might be waking after a sleep of eons. Perhaps this outburst of light was an unprogrammed, random spasm, a last dying gasp of machines that were responding wildly to the warmth of a new sun, and would soon lapse again into quiescence, this time forever. Yet Norton could not believe such a simple explanation. Bits of the jigsaw puzzle were beginning to fall into place, though many were still missing. The absence of all signs of wear, for example, the feeling of newness, as if Rama had just been created. These thoughts might have inspired fear, even terror. Somehow they did nothing of the sort. On the contrary, Norton felt a sense of exhilaration, almost of delight. There was far more here to discover than they had ever dared to hope. "Wait," he said to himself, "until the Rama Committee hears about this." Then, with a calm determination, he opened his eyes again and began a careful inventory of everything he saw. First, he had to establish some kind of reference system. He was looking at the largest enclosed space ever seen by man, and needed a mental map to find his way around it. The feeble gravity was very little help, for with an effort of will he could switch up and down in any direction he pleased. But some directions were psychologically dangerous. Whenever his mind skirted these, he had to vector it hastily away. Safest of all was to imagine that he was at the bowl-shaped bottom of a gigantic well, 16 kilometers wide and 50 deep. The advantage of this image was that there could be no danger of falling further. Nevertheless, it had some serious defects. He could pretend that the scattered towns and cities and the differently colored and textured areas were all securely fixed to the towering walls. The various complex structures that could be seen hanging from the dome overhead were perhaps no more disconcerting than the pendant candelabra in some great concert hall on Earth. What was quite unacceptable was the cylindrical sea. There it was, halfway up the well shaft, a band of water wrapped completely round it, with no visible means of support. There could be no doubt that it was water. It was a vivid blue, flecked with brilliant sparkles from the few remaining ice floes. But a vertical sea forming a complete circle 20 kilometers up in the sky was such an unsettling phenomenon that after a while he began to seek an alternative. That was when his mind switched the scene through 90 degrees. Instantly, the deep well became a long tunnel, capped at either end. Down was obviously in the direction of the ladder and the stairway he had just ascended. And now, with this perspective, Norton was at last able to appreciate the true vision of the architects who had built this place. He was clinging to the face of a curving 16-kilometer-high cliff, the upper half of which overhung completely until it merged into the arched roof of what was now the sky. Beneath him, the ladder descended more than 500 meters until it ended at the first ledge or terrace. There the stairway began, continuing almost vertically at first in this low-gravity regime, then slowly becoming less and less steep until, after breaking at 5 more platforms, it reached the distant plain. For the first 2 or 3 kilometers, he could see the individual steps, but thereafter they had merged into a continuous band. The downward swoop of that immense stairway was so overwhelming that it was impossible to appreciate its true scale. Norton had once flown round Mount Everest and had been awed by its size. He reminded himself that this stairway was as high as the Himalayas, but the comparison was meaningless. And no comparison at all was possible with the other 2 stairways, Beta and Gamma, which slanted up into the sky and then curved far out over his head. Norton had now acquired enough confidence to lean back and glance up at them, briefly. Then he tried to forget that they were there. For too much thinking along those lines evoked yet a third image of Rama, which he was anxious to avoid at all costs. This was the viewpoint that regarded it once again as a vertical cylinder or well, but now he was at the top, not the bottom, like a fly crawling upside down on a domed ceiling, with a 50-kilometer drop immediately below. Every time Norton found this image creeping up on him, it needed all his willpower not to cling to the ladder again in mindless panic. In time, he was sure, all these fears would ebb. The wonder and strangeness of Rama would banish its terrors, at least for men who were trained to face the realities of space. Perhaps no one who had never left Earth and had never seen the stars all around him could endure these vistas. But if any men could accept them, Norton told himself with grim determination, it would be the captain and crew of Endeavour. He looked at his chronometer. This pause had lasted only 2 minutes, but it had seemed a lifetime. Exerting barely enough effort to overcome his inertia and the fading gravitational field, he started to pull himself slowly up the last 100 meters of the ladder. Just before he entered the airlock and turned his back upon Rama, he made one final swift survey of the interior. It had changed, even in the last few minutes. A mist was rising from the sea. For the first few 100 meters, the ghostly white columns were tilted sharply forward in the direction of Rama's spin. Then they started to dissolve in a swirl of turbulence as the uprushing air tried to jettison its excess velocity. The trade winds of this cylindrical world were beginning to etch their patterns in its sky. The first tropical storm in unknown ages was about to break.